good, baby. Roth Radio. Don't turn it away. Here comes the chorus, baby. So who's going to the bike rally tonight, really? Because we had the two folks yesterday from the Critical Mass bike rally in yesterday afternoon. Okay, Elizabeth and Andrew came in, and we were discussing probably one of the most popular bicycle traditions on the coast here. It's something that started out 10 years ago, evidently in San Francisco. Could have guessed that. But it's a kind of a freestyle, freeform thing, evidently, that I didn't know about. I had seen it go by, being a citizen of New York City on and off for many years. And I've been here specifically for the last, I say two summers, but that's a product of public schools. That's metric for 2 years, but it sounds like less. I'm 11 summers old, Lisa. David Lee Roth, my sister Lisa Roth, in attendance, trying to format some structure to this radio career. She's shaking her head.
Not anymore. I gave up about Wednesday in the third hour.
So did the audience. Roth Radio, talking about the Critical Mass Bicycle Rally. And one of the advantages of the show, as I recently noticed, is that you can give a shout out and pretty much deliver anybody to the microphone here. We sell the most valuable thing in all American currency. Publicity. And I wanted to hear what was going on with that. Lisa, you discovered also the value of this program when you gave a shout out to the Palm Steakhouse for your breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
The Palm Steakhouse is coming at about 8 o'clock, quarter to 8. Serve you breakfast.
So I can't thank them enough.
So you can get up your energy for the Critical Mass Rally. Do you even own a bicycle, Lisa?
I told you, my stationary bike is ready and raring to go for tonight. Listen, it's better for sightseeing.
Stationary bike?
Yes. Things don't go by as quick. You can really study.
Lise, I told you, no metaphysics until happy hour. This is New York, baby.
I've been good.
Okay, I don't know if I'm going to go on the Critical Mass bike rally, because now, having had these folks here, they're very legitimate, and the idea is a great idea. They have hundreds of bicycle riders collect at a point either in the park or in one of the corners or whatever, and then they ride through the streets. Not necessarily a predestinated path, but it is that pack mentality, whether it's dogs or Hell's Angels, and I'm somewhere a delicate house been in between somewhere. But then we had a number of folks call up as well, from the blue team. That's what I call it: police, fire, paramedic, etc. And I'm an EMT, and I have been in ambulances when we go lights and sirens and there's a huge crowd of people for some reason that we can't get through, or there's a glut of traffic that we can't get through. And one of the one of my brothers in blue called up and said, "Dave, I'm a paramedic here. And on one of the bike rallies, somebody had a medical issue and they couldn't get the truck through on lights and sirens." Okay, I see it both ways now. As much as I love riding the bicycle and so forth, there's got to be a way. My whole point in bringing this back up and resoliciting the issue is there's got to be a way that you can coordinate an activity like this freestyle in the greatest city on earth, inarguably New York City. It's a conglomeration of all of us from elsewhere combined with the great personality that is native New York, and you can't figure out a bike rally. We have 500 parades here. Our police, our fire, our blue team is the best in the world at running everything. The Puerto Rican Day Parade turns into Hebrew School Day Parade, which turns into Italian Day Parade, which can turn into the bicycle issue or whatever. Somebody had called from the aviation wing of the fellows from the helicopters who were over at the field there, and had commented on, somebody had brought up about the helicopters, and it was the young lady who had mentioned that in one of the rallies that police helicopters were circling. And just by way of illumination, perhaps. I don't think helicopters are taking pictures of anybody, because I know those guys. I myself am a licensed helicopter pilot. Lise, you and I flew all over the city.
We sure did.
The other night. And what those fellas are doing are looking for the trouble. If somebody should fall down, or one of our cyclists should get knocked over by an irate taxi cab, then who's going to see it first except the eye in the sky? Mm-hmm. And if you plugged up the streets or whatever, where are all those people going to take a whiz? That's right. I know about that too. But if there's somebody, you know what would most likely happen is that you would get some poor little mom 9.5 months pregnant, thoroughly combustible, getting ready to cross the street. Here comes 300 cyclists having a great time, whooping it up, making noise, looking colorful, all noisy, moving at about 20 miles an hour. She looks over her right shoulder, becomes convinced it's a deluge of Hell's Angels times Marlon Brando times whatever, breaks water, collapses right to the pavement right there. The ambulance can't get to her in time. So you know who she's going to sue? The city. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have everybody, all the police and the mayor and the aviation and everybody being held on trial, wasting time, wasting $1 million of people's time and effort in the court systems with attorneys and the whole routine, being blamed for something they've already predicted. And now I'm seeing it kind of both ways. Lise, what about you?
I have a question for you. Do some of your law enforcement colleagues participate in this?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if some do, because who has the most humanity, who's got the most soul power than an inner city police department, truthfully?
Because integrating them in somehow might be part of the answer.
I think the answer is probably you have to coordinate some format to it. That just freestyling anarchy-wise, I understand, you know, if I was the mayor, I would say, well, I love cycling. I love the idea of cycling. But if I let you guys go, what about when Hamas demonstrates the very next day and they say, hey, you let bicycles go through. What's wrong with our religion? Oh. And as far as the guys up in the helicopters or whatever, of course they have to circle. Because now you're blocking up traffic, etc. And God forbid one of my brothers and sisters on the bicycle gets knocked over and has a head injury and you can't get the vans in there. Who's the first person who's going to know which is the way in and which is the way out? Big eye in the sky. That's the first person, too, who's going to pull you out of the drink when your cycle, when you have a few beers and you roll your cycle neatly into the Hudson. And don't laugh, because I have pulled somebody out of the Hudson.
I think you push someone in.
Knock it off. Knock it off. You're only here a few more hours, Lisa. So I think it's a spectacular idea what they're doing. But now that I've had a night to think over it, you know, I see both sides to this. And I would recommend that they find some kind of way to balance this out. Last thing I want to see is cycling as a huge group go the way of all flesh, because we couldn't kind of get some kind of structure to it.
I think their ultimate goal is to create a structure, so to speak, making bike lanes, space for them to ride in all cities, realistic space.
I think that's
defined space.
Well, that's a secondary agenda, and I'm all for that. We have here, at least, the what I call the two-lane turnpike that is for cycles only, and it runs all the way from South Street, Seaport, both ways up the island. You can go all the way up to Harlem, like so forth. But what they're talking about is a bike rally. You put a bunch of cyclists together, everything you got. Now, you know what I ride. I ride a mountain bike hybrid with cruiser handlebars and a big dog nose seat with street tires so I can sit up straight and tall and sightsee like a New Yorker, right? And you get all the speed bikes and you get all of the tandem bikes and you get all of the crazies, you know, on the old 1920s giant front wheel bikes, etc. That's classic New York in its character, you know, somewhere between the Halloween Day parade and standard Feast of San Gennaro or whatever. That's kind of what you're spelling out there. Plus, everybody in that parade lives here. There's not every, you know, people don't come from all over specifically, and it happens probably once a month. The difficulty, again, being that it's not a legit parade permit or whatever. Now you got a problem. What about the traffic? What about all these medical issues, etc.?
Well, but they mentioned they don't want a parade permit, because then you have to define where you're going, and there is a free form to this.
Well, you got a trouble then, because what's going to happen is somebody's going to get knocked over by a taxi, claim it was by a bicyclist, sue everybody involved with the cycling corporation, going to sue the mayor, the city, and me.
Okay, are you going off on this riff because you want an out from tonight?
No, I do not. No, this would be perfect publicity. That's a quick trip to CNN, and it won't be the first time I spend the evening signing autographs at the 6th Precinct.
You keep mentioning the 6th Precinct.
May 10th, 1993. Never a good time to bring it up. Animal, you have something intelligent to interfere? Go ahead.
Well, you know, like... This is something that I witnessed this week. You know, like the people here in New York, you know, they kind of civil. They look out for flashing lights, because I was standing up on the corner, then a whole gang of cop cars was coming and the light was red, and it was about like maybe six or seven cars in front of them. And then all of a sudden, the two cars up front just start honking their horn, went out and stopped the traffic coming from the other way. Then the other cars went on through, and they kind of like let the cops through. The only person that they didn't stop was the cab drivers. They were like going through anyway. But, you know, I think it should have something to do with flashing lights, because people here, they kind of respect that.
Okay, I couldn't disagree with you more, Animal. Having done several hundred drops under lights and sirens in probably four of the boroughs, working at night and generally only in the hood and half the time where Spanish is spoken as the first language. When you hear a lights and siren, I'm going to tell you there's two ways to travel in New York City, and it's just like in Beverly Hills. If you want everybody to notice you, take a big stretch limousine. If you want to go completely incognito and nobody pays any attention to you at all, let me come pick you up in an ambulance. Seriously, that you go lights and sirens, instantly your life is in your hands. And usually it's me bouncing around with Mamacita and two little niños, and we're trying to hold grandma on the gurney. I got one guy up front talking on the radio and the other guy desperately hanging on to the wheel. As soon as lights and sirens go on, there's more than one person who starts taking their life into the palm of their hand, literally. Not a month goes by that you don't hear about one of these vans flipping over or getting broadsided. And I can give you specific examples. One of my instructors, Kevin, up in the 47th Precinct, routinely wears a ballistic vest. Not because we get shot at so much, though that is changing. It's because he got hit 60 miles an hour broadside going through an intersection with somebody giving birth in the back of a truck. And when he finally woke up in intensive care, the doctors said the only thing that held your stuff together was the ballistic vest. Now, half the guys up there wear vests specifically because of the traffic implications. And when you're getting a whole lot of folks together, whether it's a bike rally or a Muslim parade or a youth group or anything, that if you don't kind of coordinate, this is one busy, jam-packed city, that if you don't coordinate, the first things that go down the drains are those kinds of systems that you would expect to be there for you, Lise.
Well, I was just wondering what happens when you put lights and sirens on a limo. People.
Well, that's Flava Flav. Then you're a rock band going to rehearsal. Animal?
Since you mentioned Flava, I got some feedback on it yesterday, Lisa, but he said that he can't call in because he's working in the studio at night, and when we get up, he's going to bed. But he did say he's coming to New York in a week or two, and he want to stop by the show to see us.
Will do. Flava Flav. You think,
yeah.
Flav rides a bicycle? I would love to see Flav.
He rides a tricycle, Dave.
You know.
You know, if Flav would show up on a bicycle, that's nothing. But he would come out on a tricycle or something. That's Flav, man.
Like a real kid's tricycle.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Would he do this? Would he take a playing card and a clothespin?
Oh, of course.
And put it on the spokes,
oh,
so it sound more like a motorbike?
I'm almost positive he would do that.
Now I'm gonna riff on that. What kind of bicycle would Flava Flav drive? We should build one and give it to him.
It would be awesome. You gotta have clocks all over it for sure.
Oh man, it's riding time.
Yeah.
Time to ride. I love that. Or maybe we can get the guys from American Chopper or whatever to build him one.
A Flav tricycle.
Yeah.
Flav trike.
Tricycle.
The mind fairly reels. Well, you heard it first here, Roth Radio. I'm Dave Flav. Trippio, good to go. Roth Radio, yeah. David Lee Roth, my sister Lisa Roth, and we have a very special guest coming up at 8 o'clock. He is Ron Scholar, the attorney who invented the pre-sexual agreement that was inspired by the Kobe Bryant case, and I guess we're going to hand these out, and everybody's going to have to sign them now, huh?
Yeah, not a bad idea.
I'm going to keep some in my wallet.
You should.
I guess you keep this right next to the condom now.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, when you're supposed to have them sign this. Like, if there's a timeline, and if you miss it.
Oh, you can't have them sign it after?
Oh, no.
No.
But I wonder how far in advance you have to have them sign it to make it valid.
I don't know.
I just thought of a really good idea.
What's that?
Condom packets with the actual form on the inside of the packet. You open it up, you sign the form, both of you sign it, you keep it in your back pocket, and you got everything.
Why don't you just print it on the condom? And then on the bottom right, and if you can read this, you're close enough anyway.
We'll have the long form and the short form.
Why are you looking at me? Don't say that when you look at me. Point to Hutch.
Oh, no!
Insult again.
Maybe you could take a make a cocktail out of it, right? You have the order form as the doily that the drink sits on, and you have RU84, the morning after pill, and you can combine that with Viagra and a hangover cure.
All the accoutrements.
Wouldn't that be great? You could call it before, during, and after pill. The before, I actually just made that up. Like the guy on Oprah. I just made that up. Maybe I have a career. I should take this show to Oprah, do you think? Would Oprah have me on the show?
I don't know.
I'm a big Oprah fan.
Are you?
I'm more of a fan of Stedman. Is she married to him?
No.
I heard they got engaged, though, after the airplane incident. Kind of scared them into it, you know?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. Tragedy always, like, throws people together like that.
You think?
Yeah, kind of happened to me, too, with me and my girl, man, you know?
What was the...
Back when I'm in my bad days, when I was a bill collector, I got into some... I got into some business, got way
stop,
out of
stop.
Hand.
Stop, you can't tell that story.
I
go
know,
ahead.
I'm not.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings. Take me away to a place where the good times roll. Don't let me stay in a place where they say, can't steal my soul.
Sounds like a helicopter taking off, doesn't it? Go ahead, turn that up. Spinning up. David Lee Roth, Roth Radio. I took my sister Lisa, who's sitting here with me now. Have you ever ridden in a helicopter before?
Only one other time.
When was that?
With you.
I don't recollect. When was
that? We were flying from, was it Moorea in Tahiti?
Oh, sure.
To Papeete.
I recollect.
And it was some crazy French military guy who decided to do figure eights and spins over what looked like Bali High to me.
Sure, it was Mount Bali High.
Yeah, that was wild.
And it put you off of rotary flight forever. It sold me on it since I was a little kid.
Yeah, but then I flew with you.
So am I a decent pilot? I guess you're here to tell the story.
That was thrilling.
What was the most fun part about it? Well, go ahead and talk to me about that.
Well, seeing you fly a helicopter... I got to tell the people, this guy doesn't even know how to work his own alarm system at home.
Well, that's certainly heartening. But I know how to correct for pressure, density, altitude, according to, ambient temperature.
Yes,
While I'm driving.
And you speak the lingo?
Well, that's half the thing, is once you go up into the grid, particularly around a city like this.
Into the grid?
Yeah, it starts at about 1,000 feet. When you're coming up, when you're headed south towards the Statue of Liberty on the New Jersey side, that's 1,000 feet. And when you come up on the other side of the river, that's 1,100 feet, and that's where the grid starts. Mm-hmm. We operate between there and about 1,500 feet in a rotary helicopter like we were doing. That's a jet turbine helicopter that we went into there. That's actually a jet engine that's spinning the propeller up there. So what do we see? Tell me. I don't recollect exactly where.
Well,
I took
first
you.
Let me describe the conditions.
Go for it.
Windy.
Mm.
It was crazy. It was pretty bumpy, which I guess makes it very physical for you, because flying a helicopter is a very physical thing, right?
There's no automatic pilot in most of these birds, and there is so much responsiveness in terms of the hydraulics and the way that you move the stick and rudder, so to speak. You know, you've got your collective, you've got your cyclic, the stick, you've got your foot pedals, and you've also got to watch all of those gauges, et cetera, et cetera. It's like a drummer. You're with the double bass set, you really have to learn to isolate every digit. One hand is doing something completely unusual from the other hand there. And it's probably the most difficult course of study I've ever done.
So now you tell me. No, we flew over the entire island of Manhattan. We saw all the boroughs. We went to Long Beach, Long Island. We went over, a place that we have frequented, you more than me, Jones Beach.
Oh, I played there a number of times. Last time you were there, Howard Stern was backstage.
Howard Stern was backstage.
And there was also a big brawl backstage, wasn't
it? Yes, there was the VIP room.
There was also a big brawl in the Daily News the other day. It's just becoming a pattern, I hope.
Yeah, that was many years ago. I believe you said 91. I say it was in the 80s.
Possible.
And you had the VIP room and the very VIP room.
There you go.
And I was in, of course, the very VIP room. And Howard Stern was there, only I didn't know who he was at the time. And that's how I know it was more than 20 years ago.
Okay.
And there was this very tall gentleman standing in the corner next to me. Everybody looking as uncomfortable as they always do in those situations. And all of a sudden, there's a loud noise, and a guy comes flying through the door, obviously was in a fight, from the VIP room into the very VIP room.
VVP.
Yes. And Howard, put his arm out in front of me and pushed me aside like a father would do to a child in a car.
And saved you.
He saved me.
He saved you so that you could
make it
to radio this very day.
He was quite the gentleman.
There you go.
He had no idea it was your sister. I didn't know who he was, and we ended up talking about nutrition.
Well, he took your advice. Now he's a rock star and I'm a DJ.
Yeah.
Did you ever think you would be flying around that actually, we only went up to 500 feet there.
Yeah, right there was only 500 feet, and you could see it very clearly.
Oh, you could pretty much read out license plates from that kind of a height there.
Yeah, the going up and down, that's so interesting, because evidently when you go through different airspace, each airport has its own airspace, you have to pay attention to their needs.
Oh, it's like an upside-down birthday cake, and you have to watch out. You know, you're flying under and over passing traffic that's landing and so forth. That's probably half of the course of study, is particularly if you're flying around an inner city area like this. It'd take you hundreds of hours just to master the ground school that results in the written kind of an exam. The written exam, the first one takes 2.5 hours. And then the second one takes another 2.5 hours. Then flying the practical, it took another several hours, almost 2.5 hours. I probably spent more time studying just for the ground school on this than I spent reading and writing arithmetic in all of my high school career.
I believe it.
Yeah, that's the single most involving committing project since we invented Van Halen, probably.
I believe it. Yeah, and we had the airplanes above us and below us, and you got to be careful of the, what's it called, that kind of traffic creates the...
Wake
turbulence.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're going to watch out for all the contrails of the jets and everybody passing by.
And then what's the rain called that only falls halfway by the time it hits the earth? It's gone. It starts with a V.
Virga.
Virga. Yep. Yeah, because it's so cold up where we were that it actually freezes before it hits the ground.
I took Animal and Brian up for a ride about a week ago. What did you guys think, man? Was that your first ride in a helicopter there, Brian?
My very first one.
And?
I loved it. My favorite part was when we sat down in the back seat and you looked back and you said, okay, Brian, Animal, we might feel a little turbulence up there, but don't be afraid. You know, Polly here's got 5,000 hours and I'm David Lee Roth.
That was right, man.
Now you've been in a helicopter before, Animal.
Yeah,
right?
This was my second time when I went in with you because, like, I remember one time Easy wanted to go to the Guns N' Roses show up in San Diego. We took one up the coast. It was kind of bumpy, but my favorite was when you rode me over that Statue of Liberty, man, from the top, man. That was so cool, man.
It was amazing, too. When you put somebody as big as Animal in the back seat, we have to recorrect all of the center of gravity charts. We have to recorrect where we put the fuel and how much fuel we put in there. No, it'll take you a good 20 minutes with your flight computer to figure out exactly how much gas for time because you just added another 400-pound human being in there.
Did you have to dump some fuel?
Yeah, absolutely. We could only take up about a quarter of a tank, which spells out a certain amount of time. You got to have 20 minutes left by FAA regulations for safety, etc. The coolest thing, though, it was like a lowrider, the old school style, where you would put cement bricks in the trunk of your car and cut the springs, and it would ride really low and tight to the ground. When you put Animal in the back of a $2 million turbine helicopter, it lowrides in the back a little bit. And landing is a solid gas, man. because usually they're a little jinky, you know. Usually it's a notoriously unstable kind of aircraft.
Yeah, I noticed. Yeah.
And when you put somebody like Animal in the back, it all just kind of settles.
It anchors it.
It anchors like some junk in the trunk. Yeah. Nothing but yeah.
I was very impressed when you landed it, man. I was really very impressed, man. You
that
really
was
blew me away.
That strikes me as the most important part, isn't it?
Yeah.
Also, whenever you were turning, you always had to turn towards Animal's side because he would anchor the helicopter down. Paulie told you, like, turn that way. Take right turns or left turns.
No. We put them in there, and there's a very different kind of a balance to these kind of aircraft. Usually you don't have one person who is that big. Animal is 6'5", almost 400 pounds. So, but it made it a really cool drive that it weighted. It felt just like the 51 Mercury with the lowered sled in the back. But,
oh, no, I'll tell you what built my confidence.
Was that?
When Paulie, your partner, sitting next to you, said, Dave, because of the turbulence, you can't depend on the gauges, so just look at the string outside and make sure it flies straight.
Okay. Well, he's right, is that with all of the gauges that you have, no matter how digitally correct, how much up-to-date you are, no matter how modern your stuff is, and this goes for boats as well, that in the end, it is your pilotage, it's called. Because your gauges may be reading that you're heading straight, and you are, but your nose is aimed over at 11 o'clock, okay? That's because the wind is pushing your nose off to the side, but you're still compelling forward.
Yeah.
You can't look at those gauges. There's a little red string that sets off. It looks like a little number two pencil.
It's a piece of yarn.
Yeah, it's a little red string that comes with every $8 million aircraft. And you think I'm kidding. And you saw it, and there's a little string that, in case your gauges aren't working and in case all the digital Garmin GPS is fooling around with you and everything else is dumping battery power, you look out at the string. And did you notice it's a little red string, like a Kabbalah string? And hopefully it has the same impact on your future. That if I just follow the string and keep it straight, everything will turn out just fine. That's helicopter music. So would you go up again with me?
Oh, absolutely.
Because we can pretty much go just about anywhere. I'm a licensed pilot, so...
Because the second time, I'm going to open my eyes.
The takeoff is amazing, isn't it? And seeing this city, it's like every King Kong movie you've ever seen. It's like every 1930s newsreel that you've ever seen. When you go out, and especially when I come in over the water from like Sandy Hook, you know, out that in part Jersey or whatever, and I come across the water heading up onto the Verrazano Bridge, and that's just classic, man. That's where our grandparents came in on the boat, for geez sakes, you know. Pass through the Statue of Liberty there, that's, you know, docking all those old boats. You enter into history in a really modern kind of way. Best place ever to see from the sky. What?
A couple of things. First of all, it's amazing how small everything gets. Central Park looks like a patch of grass. But another confidence builder was how you were pointing out all the sites, like every crash. Like, do you remember the 747 that lost its tail? Those are the houses it ran into. And down there, that's where the 727 that lost its belly.
Well, welcome to New York. Welcome to New York,
kid. Like going, yeah, thanks, Dave. Where's the Statue of Liberty?
Roth Radio, we are the Statue of Liberty, broadcasting New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach, and the entire free sky.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.
Roth Radio. I think she's singing this song for Jude Law, Elise. I'm pointing at page 6. I'm not pointing at Jude. You got a microphone there?
I got a microphone.
Are you going to use it?
I'm using it.
I got a poetic license, and I ain't afraid to invoke it.
Speaking of Jude Law, he's been hanging out at your West Coast office a lot.
What, are you a wise guy?
No, but I'm wise.
My West Coast office is crazy girls. Jude Law got popped at... whatever it is. I forget the name of the body shop. Which
oh,
is,
my mistake.
Well, it's a big mistake. Well, this is an issue. Welcome to the Roth Family Breakfast. David Lee Roth, my sister Lisa Roth in attendance.
Which is better, Body Shop or Crazy Girls?
Crazy Girls, because that's more like a hang. That's closer to the Bada Bing.
I agree.
If you've been to the Bada Bing, or if you've seen it, there's a Freudian slip. If you've seen the Bada Bing on The Sopranos, then you know the Crazy Girls, which is where I met Animal.
That's right.
He was the man at the door.
Were you dancing?
No, I was dancing
is
people
Animal
out of the...
Is Animal your stage name?
No, I was dancing people up out of the club that would, you know, get out of hand. So I was a dance instructor. That's how Dave hired me, as his dance instructor. You didn't know that?
That's what I say. When people go, yeah, who's he and what does he do? I go, that's my dance instructor. And when they go, oh, I go, oh, yeah, watch this. Animal, make them dance. Jude Law, this is coming from Page Six, where the only news that we're going to read shows up. Jude Law, who broke up with the molten hot Sienna Miller, has been spotted around the Marmont making time. That's the famous hotel in Hollywood with a stripper, a sunset strip mecca for mammary girls. I'm misreading this intentionally. Famously name checked, he's going out to the Love Club. And our spy says that Law's latest squeeze is a far cry from the beautiful Miller. He's been going to the Body Shop strip club every night and hanging out with his nasty young brunettes. She's really beat looking. Do you think that's because of Jude?
Now that's a news story.
What does the before picture look like? He's the one who's going to need the sexual harassment thing coming up here.
Yeah, maybe.
We have a very special guest here, Ron Scholar. He's coming up in about 15 minutes, and he's the New York City entertainment lawyer who developed the pre-sexual agreement that was inspired by the Kobe Bryant case. And a classic? There it is. Pick up the pieces. Get the message?
Got it.
It's the clever gang behind the scenes there picking this stuff out. If you're going to have to pick up the pieces, this guy is going to be the guy that you want to call, Ron Scholar. He's going to tell us about this agreement. And I think that Jude Law is the next one setting himself up for this kind of stuff. Do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Completely.
I don't think you have to try very hard these days to get set up.
Who's being set up in basketball? A source close to the Knicks president, Isaiah Thomas, says that Thomas's accuser and former senior vice president, Anousheh, was offered $250,000 to make her sexual harassment claims disappear. First off, you think he sexually harassed her? What is sexual harassment today? What are they claiming, Animal? Do you know what they're claiming he said to her? And if you could please say it in the manner that he might have said it, please.
Oh, man. Well, they're kind of saying that he kind of like groped her a little bit, you know, but he's saying he has did nothing like that, nothing intentionally like that. You know, he's a family man. He's just going on like that.
So but was she saying that he made advances verbally to her, Lise?
Yeah, they were verbal. It was verbal harassment. He called her names like Ho and such, and then he demanded that she sleep with him.
No, wait a minute. I've never heard a black man call a girl, y'all a hoe and such. Because that would be like a college grad. And there are many black college grads out there, but I have yet to hear one go, y'all a hoe and such.
I bet they will now.
We always use the B word, you know.
Y'all broke back now. Hey, Reverend Knight, Reverend Al is going to be on in about 14 seconds. Anyways, Sanders rejected the deal. That's the girl saying that she would need at least $6.5 million to make the harassment charges stop. Whatever. Turn up the music. Come on, man. All right, turn it down.
My brother has a very short attention span.
For these kinds of girls, yeah. Come on, man. $6.5 million. What is she? She's like mentally scarred from this point on, probably.
That's a picture right there. Right?
Go ahead.
That's a picture right there?
Yeah.
She's not that hot.
None of these girls.
Way, way hotter than that, if I know him correctly. She's not even hot.
No, she's not hot. Neither was Monica Lewinsky for the president, or Jennifer whatever, or. What's going on here?
Monica had that big bootay, though.
Well, it's a lot bigger now. And growing, even as we speak. But do you think, Lise, that fellow, would he squander his
rep? That fellow?
Well, he's now, whatever. Well, she's a hoe and such.
No, continue.
So that fella.
About that fella, what?
I'm trying to be politically correct on both sides because I think they're both schnooks.
Okay.
Okay? Clearly, he probably said something. It didn't arrive out of nowhere. But what are we allowed to do anymore? I've been using Ron Burgundy as my template for what I can and can't do around the water cooler.
I just want you to know, Dave, you actually saved me from my doorman career, because you can just like walk by a person and they want to sue you. That's the newest thing in L.A. They want to sue you. They don't want to fight you. They like, hit me and I'll sue you and all this kind of stuff. And you know who I am, what kind of attitude that I have, what kind of background I come from. And I just can't take that, man. You know, they are talking all that smack. I'd be wanting to, like, let's go outside and do our thing, but I can't do that anymore.
So what's happening is that they're trying to encourage you to make some kind of contact.
That's
I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
A lot of characters who have no business being in that part of town, you know, complaining and going, you don't know who my father is, and you don't know who I am, and so forth, and they're encouraging that kind of behavior. Everybody knows that under every single possible person knocked to the sidewalk is a lawyer.
That's real.
That's what they mean by a litigious society. Don't forget, 9 o'clock, we got Deborah Wilson, who's the host for TV Water Cooler on the TV Guide channel. Is the TV Guide channel real little?
It's a very tiny channel, but it's growing.
It's a regular size channel, but the picture's real small, right?
Yes, it is. It's compromised.
They just redid the TV Guide, which used to be pocket-sized, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a regular size magazine. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that. Should it remain the same?
You know, we talked about this yesterday. Familiarity.
Familiarity breeds contempt for me. A thing of beauty lasts about a weekend, but it sounds like Deborah Wilson's going to be with us for a while. She's got her show. It's coming up. She had 8 seasons on Mad TV.
She's very funny.
Yep. She's the first African-American female performer on Mad TV. Deborah Wilson, she's calling us up at 9.
Oh, good.
And if I'm not mistaken, tireless self-promotion being the American, at least the Roth family way, we got the Palm Restaurant, the Palm Family Restaurant, bringing, barbecue's just not for breakfast anymore, but it is here, right?
Yes, it blows my mind, and I am very appreciative and excited.
What did you order? What did you order for breakfast?
Favorite cut.
Which is what?
Ribeye. Is there any other?
Animal, did you order up something?
Yeah, I ordered the T-bone, so I don't know if I'm going to get it, but I hope so.
Because we're about to deal with sexual harassment, and I want everybody to be on their game here. If nothing else, I want everybody to be prepared to go out and, on behalf of the Roth family, Roth family Christmas, which is what we've been experiencing here all week, on behalf of the Christmas, I'm going to expect that you will go at least sexually harass your wife. And just remember.
What do I do?
You're not married, are you?
No.
Well, you're going to have to put up a photo ad like Clay Aiken.
I can do it over the air.
You could. This is one big booty call, Lise. You know they're not paying me enough to get up this early. Anyways, sexual harassment goes along with our breakfast, right? I think that it says here, Sanders' lawyer claims that the $6.5 million demand is wrong. Hello. But the source says that the reason for the high demand is because Sanders has financial problems and her husband has had 4 tax liens against him. I'm lost here.
No, they're saying that her motivation is to pay the money her husband owes for his tax liens. But from what I understand, the amount he owes is under $10,000.
Of course. You know, if she's coming from a family that has $6.5 million in debt, that means he's got twice that much in the bank, right? How can somebody possibly run up that much debt and not be a millionaire themselves? And if he was a millionaire, what's she doing working next to this guy? Is exactly it. I've been sued by people before. The guy who opens the gate claims he lent me money, and I found out through a private investigator a month later after the case that he had been sued by a number of credit card companies. And he himself not only was flat out, but and gotten into all kinds of billing problems and stuff on his own. Happens all the time. I think Jude Law is probably setting himself up for the next move there.
Yeah, everybody's a, what's it called, some kind of duck? A sitting duck.
A sitting duck. Water off a duck's butt. Roth Radio. I'm David Lee Roth. It's my sister, Lisa Roth. You know, who just had a problem with this as well was Bill Maher. again, you know, he
had that was a little bit ago, but yeah, he did.
The actress slash model slash airline attendant. You never will see.
No, wait, which job do you think she made?
She was an airline attendant.
Yeah.
Come on. The rest of it is like slash whatever. It's no, it doesn't exist in the same sentence. This is the age of specifics, the age of focus. And if you're making enough doing it one, then you're not going to do the other. And that case disappeared very quickly. And you know he had to settle out of court because what happens, and most folks aren't aware of this, what happens is that when somebody sues you for something like this, her attorney is working for a percentage. And you're going to have to go find an attorney who's going to charge you $500 an hour. And her attorney's going to go, great, it's a waiting game. We'll just drag your name through the mud, whether you did it or not. And we can stretch this case for 7 years. And even if you win, Mr. $500 an hour, I'm going to appeal. And you'll start all over again. So you're looking at, to settle something, if she wants $250,000, you could easily spend $4 million processing the case just to find out. She goes, I want to appeal. And it'll become your new occupation. You'll become what's called a professional defendant. And I smell that going on in here. David Lee Roth, professional radio personality.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.